Zoom calls are bad enough with adults, and now we expect 17 9-year-olds to do this? Come on! Also, I don't remember how to do algebra, what a semicolon is for, or what the capital of Kansas is. I'm a grown-up. That's what I have an iPhone for. Hello? Seriously, I'm drowning here. If you have felt like this in the last few weeks, you're not alone. COVID-19 has thrown all of our normal school plans and rhythms out the window, and we're scrambling to piece things together. Today, we're going to talk about the practical ins and outs of helping your kids navigate the craziness of a school year that nobody was ready for. Chuck, Kim, so good to be with you. What do we do about this topic of kids in school and Zooming? How do we do this? What are you guys experiencing?
I think one thing is we need to change our goals. The goals that we had for the 2019 school year are different than our goals for 2020. Reading and math might not be the main goal. The main goal that is that our child is mentally healthy. That instead of academic goals, maybe it's those soft goals like flexibility and resiliency. Because I've seen, last spring, so many parents were so stressed out about the worksheets and getting their assignments in on time. And maybe this isn't the year for that. And I actually believe that 10, 15, 20 years from now, the stuff they learn by being more flexible and the skills they learn and being more resilient are probably going to help them more than multiplication tables or state capitals. Look, all of us, we still don't know our state capitals, and I think we are doing really, really well.
Thank God my paycheck does not depend on me knowing the capital of Kansas. At least not this week it doesn't, right?
That's right.
No, I think you're right, Kim. It makes me think about Maya Angelou is famous for saying, and I might butcher it a little bit, but she says, at the end of the day, people won't remember what you said, but they'll always remember how you made them feel. And I think that's so important in this moment of pandemic and this moment of dramatic change, that our kids have a context and an environment of love and support as they, like us, are navigating these uncertain times. And at the end of the day, they're not going to remember how much they accomplished over a Zoom call or on Seesaw or Schoology or any of the millions of apps that all of us, Google Classroom, that all of us parents had to get used to. But I do think that that social and emotional context in which they are navigating this is going to be way more important down the road.
And this is in line with what teachers think, too. I mean, a lot of the teachers I've talked to have said, you know, these first few weeks or even months of school, as they're getting adjusted, whether it be virtually or back in the classroom, they're really focusing on kids feeling safe and kids learning to articulate what they're feeling and what they need, much more so than worksheets and activities. So what we're saying isn't just a parent's view. Teachers are saying that also.
Mm-hmm. That's good to hear. So how do we motivate our kids to do their schoolwork, to learn the algebra, to learn the state capitals, when really we know and the teachers might know that's not really the main goal this year?
Well, so maybe it's not the actual worksheet getting completed, but it's submitting to authority. Your teacher is telling you need to do this work, so you do it. Maybe it's learning how to schedule your time so that you spend this much time. Like you start to realize, you know what? I can't sit more than 30 minutes at a time. Because in the classroom, they don't do that either. So your kid learns how to manage themselves. I do this much work and then I go take a walk or I go shoot baskets or I go eat a cookie, whatever.
Yeah, I will say for us, it's been interesting for me to be a student of my students. I've got three kids and, you know, right or wrong, I've spent more time watching them learn, engaging in their schoolwork than I ever have before, because not only were they home from school, but I was home from work, right? So I was around them and I got to be a part of morning meetings and, you know, they do like all kinds of things on Friday where they're sharing their learnings and things. And so I think for me, to your point, Kim, it's been really helpful to know what is the attention span of my three kids? What are the things that excite them about school? What are the things that frustrate them about school? And to not have the same expectations for all three of my children. That's been a big thing to learn. I love my son Samuel. You know, he is super smart, and he learned early on how to, you know how you can play podcasts at 1.5 speed?
Yep.
He learned how to do that with his teacher's videos that they were recording. And guess what? It worked for him. So Sam was like done in 1.5 as much time as it might take Nathan or Isabel to do something else. And just learning to be adjusting to that. You know, we tried to play basketball a lot to give the boys a physical break outside, ride bikes with all three of them outside. And I think those things were as valuable learning for me, honestly, with my kids than anything else. So I do think that it's an opportunity as parents to be students of our student and really understand what they need to thrive.
That's great. Chuck, you mentioned riding bikes with the kids in the middle of the day. I know we have a lot of working parents that are listening right now. How should we as parents be helping our kids learn while also on Zoom, while also getting our own Zoom meetings done? Any tips and tricks for the balancing act of work, schooling, riding bikes, all the things?
Yeah, you know, the first thing I would say, and I'm glad you brought that up, Lena, because, I mean, honestly, I have to just recognize that I've been in a very privileged position to have the freedom to do that, even to have the freedom to work from home. There are a lot of people who have been deemed essential. And so while a lot of, you know, think about all the frontline workers in all kinds of ways, whether they worked in the grocery store or in an emergency room, that didn't have that opportunity. And so I think the first thing I would say to those parents is self-care is so important. Give yourself grace. Not everybody had the same access to resources or opportunity or technology to do what they needed to do with their kids. And I know I felt at moments that I was failing my kids, even with the flexibility I had. And I think all of us as parents have probably had moments in this transition, this crazy, unexpected time, where we're just like, I'm not doing the best by my children. And I think that's the first thing I would say to those parents is give yourselves grace. What else would you bring to the conversation, Kim?
Well, I think phone a friend, yeah. Ask for help. I mean, I totally agree with you. People are in all different places as far as what their capacity is. And also, my daughter was talking about the risk tolerance. People have different levels of risk tolerance as far as how much they're going to engage in other activities. But what I've seen a lot of parents in my neighborhood do is they trade off. Like one morning, three families might have their kids go to one house. And so those parents are monitoring the kids for that morning while the other two houses can do work, and they trade off. And they're also doing it with subjects that they're not so great in. A neighbor that's great in science, well, if their kid has a question on science, they're not coming to mom or dad. They're taking their tablet and they're walking two doors down and talking to the neighbor. I think this is a great opportunity for us to really operate as a community.
That's awesome. It reminds me of that phrase, it takes a village.
Yes.
Or
yes.
Maybe it takes a street or a cul-de-sac to raise your kids or whatever.
An apartment building.
That's right.
So, Kim, I love that. I also think you live in a very unique neighborhood because right now I can't imagine my kids going next door to Mr. Marty to learn science. Maybe they would because I actually know Mr. Marty, but I don't know the guys three doors down. So how would you recommend that that families even start to lean on each other, whether it's people in the neighborhood or other family members or what? How would you start those conversations?
Well, this also might be a great time to get to know the parents that your kid's in class with. I mean, you're on Zoom together. Ask the teacher. Now, what's hard is if your kid's not there, they might not even know who they are connected with. But that could be an advantage too, because you could determine right. What families you want your kid to be most connected with and just start working with those families. And if, you know, based on your risk tolerance, you might not want the kids in your house, but I've been doing all kinds of porch dates. So maybe you have kids on your porch, or maybe you meet under a shelter at a park. So it's going to require, and I know some parents are probably listening going, are you kidding? I've got no time to try to drum up new friends. But it's just figuring out, well, is it worth it? If I could get a couple mornings free where my kids at some other house and then have extra kids at my house on a couple mornings, then maybe you'll say, you know what, it is worth it to make some phone calls and find some new friends.
Right. Well, it sounds like you're saying, are you willing to put in the work right now and the extra time to benefit you and your kids in the coming weeks, months of this wild school year?
Right. And I think it's, as far as, you know, all last season, it seemed like just about every episode, when we would get down to it, the answer is community.
Yes.
Like, right. No matter what it was, it's and the answer is community. That's and right. I think the same is true here. So I believe that spending a little extra time to build your community, and maybe it's playing some online games with them at first to see what families you sort of gel with.
And, I mean, in fairness, too, just thinking about the timing, like, my kids now are back to physical school. So let's talk a little bit about that. You know, one of the things that we had to think through is, how do you prepare your kids for a very different in-school experience, right? One where sports were in question. You know, were they going to be able to play sports or not? Masks were not in question. So how do you train? You know, for me, I was like, my first grader is going to be wearing a mask for 6 hours. I don't want to wear a mask for 6 hours. How does that work? How do we condition her for that? All the changes in school. And what I will tell you is, I've been really surprised, to your point, Kim. Kids are so adaptable. They are so adaptable. Our kids are used to the masks, and I love that they're telling me how many times they're washing their hands a day and all those things. So I know that the school is doing those kinds of things. And I am really glad that they're getting that socialization with their friends and, quite frankly, with their teacher again. And so there are some families like mine who are also now embracing, and to your point around risk, what does that look like to step back into what is certainly not a zero risk environment at all, but one where you as a parent are prayerfully and hopefully thoughtfully thinking through, how do I feel about my kid being in a physical place again with people when I know the social emotional benefits are massive? And so there's that balancing act that I think we're walking into as families now. And I think that's a different decision for every family.
Okay, so whether our kids are hybrid, virtual learning in person, or all on Zoom, or all in person, inevitably, our kids are going to complain at some point about not liking the way school is going, or their attention span is going to shorten, and they're going to be sick of learning algebra, albeit on a screen or in class. How do we handle, practically, our kids' resistance to the learning style that we're all forced into right now, given the current situation?
I think first we need to check our expectations. Are our expectations realistic? Sometimes we're frustrated because we just have expectations that our kids simply can't meet. For example, my daughter is homeschooling her kindergartner, and they were doing numbers, and they were doing 8. Well, he saw the 8 and he goes, "This is snowman." And he started drawing a snowman on the 8, and then he's got a snow scene. And she's like, "No, you can't do that." And then she realized, if he was in a classroom with 15 or 20 other kids, the teacher's not looking at every single kid's paper every minute. So she realized that she was probably being, her expectations were out of line. She was expecting him to be laser focused this whole period of time, and a kindergartner simply isn't going to be. And you know what? It's okay if you're making snowmen out of your number 8. That's kind of fun and creative.
So you're basically saying, Kim, just roll with it. Kids are going to be kids, and let them be kids.
Not always. I mean, sometimes, you know, if they're not doing any of their work, you can't just roll up. I mean, that's back to expectations. I think also it's really important, if you're having a hard time, talk to the teacher. And depending on your kid's age, you know, if they're middle school, and especially if they're high school, coach their kid in how they talk to their teacher. Let them figure out how you negotiate and compromise. I mean, those aren't bad words. Those are good skills to learn how to do. And tell their teacher, "I'm having a really hard time. I can't do this work, or this environment isn't good for me."
I would say, from a parental standpoint, if you haven't already, name your grief. Name your losses. 2020 for all of us is a year with many losses. the loss of vacations. Some of us have experienced the loss of loved ones, certainly the loss of whatever we thought was normal. And so I think that as parents, it's important spiritually that we name our losses, and quite frankly, that we help our kids begin to name their losses as well. So that's one thing I would say. I think the other side of that, the flip side of that is, and it's not always easy to do this or see it, but practicing gratitude. Amidst all that we're losing, amidst all the things that have changed, learning to be grateful, learning to be grateful for very simple things, right? Like, they didn't draw a snowman on their 8 today. Home run, right? You know, I mean, those are the kinds of things that we have to do as parents to help ourselves through this time. And I would encourage you to think about that as a way to practice prayer during the pandemic as a parent. Name those losses to God and practice gratitude with God and ask for his help, ask for his empowerment, because we all need it. It's just a crazy, crazy year. My saying for 2020 is 2020 is that kid that someone just needs to give a hug and say you're worthy so they can stop trying to outdo every other year in terms of challenges. Like, my goodness, what else can happen? And then something else happens. And so I do think that this ability to name that emotionally and grieve those losses, but also to be thankful for the ways that we are being cared for amidst this crazy time is really important as a parent.
So Chuck, give us an example of today's a Monday. What might be something that you share with Nathan or Samuel that you're grieving the loss of and something you're celebrating today, you're thankful for?
Yeah. Well, I mean, here's one. I shared this with my family. I'm traveling to Philly and I was sharing with my boys, I was sharing with all my family that I'm going to go see grandma, but I'm not going to get to hug her. You know, like, I'm going to see my mom. I'm going to be in her presence, which is better than just the phone or Zoom. But I'm not going to hug my 84-year-old mother because I'll just have gotten off a plane. And so even my best quarantining efforts on the front side of that don't mean anything when you get on the plane. And I'm grieving that. That's, you know, I mean, my mom's not like gravely ill or anything, but you do just start thinking about how many more times will I see her? And to think about a time of not being able to embrace her is a hard thing. So I'm sharing that with my kids as I look forward to that trip. And the other thing, though, is on the flip side, just sharing gratitude that, like, but I get to see her, right? I get to see her. It is better than just a Zoom call. And I can be thankful for that. And heck, we can both eat our half of a cheesesteak together. And I'm going to celebrate the heck out of that, even though I can't hug my mom. So I do think that bringing my kids into those moments and sharing how I'm feeling emotionally, I hope is just helpful modeling for them.
That's great. So an opportunity for us as parents right now, while school is different than we thought that it ever would be this year, to regularly model for our kids, being honest about what we're grieving the loss of, and practicing gratitude even when it's difficult. And maybe if they can learn how to do that well, it'll serve them in how they interact with their classmates and how they interact with their teachers and what their day looks like over Zoom or in a classroom with a mask on. Those getting to the root, that spiritual health, what you're saying is really important, even just for them to survive the school year.
We're all in this parenting thing together. We'd love to hear your thoughts, comments, questions, and ideas. So reach out to us all over email at podcasts@crossroads.net. That's podcasts with an S. You Can Do This is a production of Crossroads Church, Cincinnati, Ohio.